Stuff Is Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit Podcast. My name is Ben Vallis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. Lots to discuss today. Primarily, what's going on with the Celtics? Offensively, defensively, culturally. It's all bad right now. Joining us, our New Zealand correspondent, Joe, aka Nose Quotes McFly. Joe, welcome back, man. How's it going?
Good, man. Holy hicka. You just switched on the energy right then. You went from being Ben's usual vibe, which is sort of a chilled out entertainer. So it's Good Friday here in the Antipodes, and it's a sleeping day for everybody. And Ben's just come out absolutely all guns blazing.
How you been, man? We haven't had you on in a month or two. So how's life?
I've worked probably. This is great content for the podcast listeners, I'm sure. But I've just been working really hard, man. Really hard. We've got a 31 March deadline for tax here in New Zealand, so
it's busy times.
Going pretty hard, trying to sort it. And there's a change of tax rate that just occurred yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Spicy!
Spicy. So that, you know, necessitated a little tax planning.
And so you pair that with how terrible the Celtics have been. It's probably been a couple of really terrible months there for you, Joe. So the Celtics yesterday, they suffered another loss in a very familiar style. They went down big to the Mavs. They clawed their way back, only to ultimately lose the game. Joe, it's been a while, like we said, since you've been on. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on this. So let's just start broad here and go from there. What's wrong with the Celtics?
I think it's a, like, this is, I'm starting to think that maybe my opinions get a little kooky, but I feel like it's just this like spiritual malaise that they have, you know, mm-hmm. like I think that's at least a huge part of it. And that manifests itself in on the floor in ways that you can identify strategically perhaps. But I think honestly, I don't think that they believe that this season's worth it. Like, I don't think they do. I think they're just waiting for the season to be over, to be honest.
Only to turn it on in the playoffs, or are they going to give the playoffs up as well?
Man, I don't see it, eh? Like, I don't see it from this team. I don't see, you know, we've had teams before where we've had similar patterns, except for the fact that they completed the comeback and actually won, or at least took the lead. You know, mm-hmm. I've always had this theory that, you know, it's not a comeback until you actually take the lead. And once you take the lead, you can actually lose it. But, you know, it's sort of like there's a mental barrier that's broken. They never actually take the lead. They just kind of get to within five and maybe even two like they did in the last minute. And it's just, I'm just a bit like, oh, so what? You know, like it's just as bad a loss as a 10-point blowout to me, to be honest.
And so what do you think the catalyst is for them just completely throwing in the towel this season? Is it COVID related? Is it the quick turnaround with the season running late last year? Or where do you think this comes from? Because it's obviously, you know, there are a few teams like the Raptors, for example, who are also imploding. But, you know, everyone's in the same boat as far as these different franchises. And we're not seeing that same attitude repeated across the entire league. So why do you think it's impacting the Celtics specifically?
It's hard for me to comment on the rest of the league. Another thing I'm realizing is that I'm not so much of a fan of the entire league. Like, I don't really watch anyone other than the Celtic. It's just too much, right? Like, you can't do it. You just can only watch highlights. There's an awful lot of content every night. for the Celtics, I think, like, if I could put it down to a timing thing, I'd say it wasn't actually the COVID thing. It was that West Coast trip they went on immediately after having that really close loss to the Lakers. It felt like it turned on there, and that's where I felt like I identified, for me at least, this pattern of get down behind, come back, don't quite finish it out. We had like at that time, I think we lost to like Kings, the Jazz, and the Suns on that trip, all in the exact same way. So I don't know what exactly happened about there, but like it's like they just kind of, I don't know, man. It's as though at that time they thought that the that she'll be right. You know, like, we are the Celtics. We've been a 51 team for the last 5 years, and it's going to come through. And then all of a sudden, holy, we're 50 games into a 70 game season, and this is actually who we are.
Like, we suck.
we don't. But the trouble is, we don't suck, right? Like, we're just run of the mill mediocre, and that's who we are.
It's interesting you point out that Lakers game as the starting point, because
another one was the Spurs game. Sorry, there's a bad loss against the Spurs where we got up by a couple possessions, and then we just kind of like choked it away. Kemba did. I think that was also on that, maybe on that West Coast trip as well. I can't remember.
Well, the Lakers game, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's when we lost Marcus Smart. That's when he busted his calf and he went out. And yeah, I mean, we lost our biggest culture driver and probably our biggest defensive presence. And, you know, Marcus Smart's been back for a little while now, Joe, but he's been copying a bit of criticism from the fan base. How do you feel about Marcus Smart since his return? I know you're one of the bigger Marcus Smart fans. I mean, we all are. Like, our Google chat is literally called the Marcus Smart Appreciation Society. But like, he's been pretty frustrating to watch. So I'm just curious on your thoughts there, Joe.
I certainly like have sympathy for that perspective. Like like everybody else. Like, I was on the chat with you when he threw up that heat. Like, when he thought the shot clock was down to 0.3 seconds on the Celtics. Man.
Yeah,
it was. It's hard to just put into words how dumb that was. I'm really struggling with superlatives. Like, I'm just trying to think of a time when I felt really stupid. I'll tell you a quick story, actually. Okay. So, when I was 16, my dad sent me into town with a car and with a car with a trailer on the back to go to this concrete block manufacturing place. And I pull up into there. I haven't driven with a trailer very much. I wasn't that confident a driver. And they put the concrete blocks in the back of the trailer, and I attempted to back this trailer out of the concrete place and across the street, and smack into the into another car goes the trailer. Right? Oh, I felt such an idiot. And then they tell me, it's actually a loop. Like, you can just keep, you know, like, the place I went in, if you just keep driving along it, there was an exit on the other side. Like, and I'm just trying to think back how awful I felt when I'd done something so stupid.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, that was what I was thinking about with Marcus Smart at that point there. Like, what I did there was not even close to as stupid as what Smart did. Like, it's just, and I just wonder how that affects you. You know what I mean? Like, you just, you know, when you do something really dumb, you catch a mistake you've done at work or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But Smart was so stupid. Like,
yeah, the magnitude of it and the scale and the visibility of it. I can't imagine in the moment. And he tried to play it off as well, right? You could see him saying to Kemba, like, no, man, like, you know, we only had 0.3 seconds on the clock. I had to do it. And, I don't know if he realized it and he just tried to play it off, or if he still didn't know after the fact, but it kind of captures the post-injury return Marcus Smart experience so far, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't shot the ball well, like, but with Smart, I'm definitely on the side. Like, I don't think he's playing different, personally. Like, it's the same dude out there whose style of play is exactly the same, and yes, he takes too many three-pointers, too many bad three-pointers, but he is, like, when people are talking about trading, I'm just like, that is exactly the opposite of the type of guy we need to trade.
Yep.
It's just, like, we just need emotional leaders on the team, you know? And you cannot, like Brown and Tatum just aren't. They're just not. So, can't, like, just leave them in a sea of guys that are a bit kind of placid. You know,
I did think that prior to Kemba Walker's return, Marcus Smart, he played like a modified version of Marcus Smart, where he was a lot more pass first and more sort of setting the table and less jacking up a lot of these early shot clock boneheaded shots. And now, since Kemba's come back and since subsequently Marcus has come back, he's kind of reverted to that more frustrating play style.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything to that? Like, it did seem like he was playing a slightly different style earlier in the season, and now he's kind of reverted to bad habits. Or am I just in my head there?
No, I mean, we're kind of shooting from the hip a little bit here. You know, it's not like I've got the data to back this up, but no, I sense you're probably right. The entire team is really three happy right now, and Smart's definitely part of that. It's the part of his game I hate the most. Mm-hmm. It's actually the only part of his game I hate. I love all the rest of it.
So getting back to trying to get a hold on what the hell is going on with this team, there was a post after the game yesterday by a Reddit user, PHX292. They go on to say, the Celtics didn't lose because they didn't have enough heart. They were creating good looks the whole game. And I'm not going to read out the whole post, but to summarize, they're basically saying it's not a lack of heart. They actually are working to generate good shots, and it's just a matter of the shots aren't going down. And the solution is just to convert on those good looks and those layups. Does that ring true at all to you, Joe, or
hell
is it
no.
as simple as just make your shots?
I don't mean to be disrespectful to our correspondent here, but no. Like, we are not creating good looks. We're creating off-the-dribble three-point looks. We create no pressure on the rim. Look, the thing about offense in basketball is you've got to put pressure on the hoop. If you don't do it, if you don't do that, like, nothing kind of works after that. Like, the thing about threes, right, that I sort of feel is overlooked in with analytics is they just have this habit of going in when you earn them. Like mm-hmm. when you earn the attempt or when you earn the right for that three to go in. That made threes come off the back of like strong effort plays. They don't come off the back of lazy plays. They don't come and to be honest, throwing the ball to Tatum at the top of the key for a sidestep three is a lazy play, right? Doing that Kemba Walker high screen and roll, it's just a lazy play. They can get it any time they want.
Yep.
And you know, that creates a kind of attitude that just infects. It's like, oh, we didn't try very hard that position. You know, there's no flow to it. You know, like there's no pressure on the rim and there's no kick out of the ball thereafter. There's no rotation for the opposition team. It's just kind of like, it's just pickup, man. Like,
yep.
You know, it's BS. So, no, I don't think we failed to convert on open looks. I'd expect us to convert a slightly higher percentage on the looks that we did have, but they're not good.
Mm-hmm.
We're just playing lazy basketball, man.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a tweet by Kungu NBA, who's a really good sort of Celtics Twitter follow. They wrote, the Boston offense is a lot of read and react, double drags into handoffs, into pick and rolls, etc. It requires five guys reading defenses and moving together. It's beautiful when dudes are locked in. It looks like people taking turns ISOing when it's not being run. I think that really, it kind of backs up what you've just said, Joe, and sort of captures the whole situation there, that like we do have this system, but it requires all guys to be completely bought in. And it does require a lot of sort of dynamic reading of the defense as opposed to sort of running pre-scripted plays. But it's just not working for our guys.
Just a little quick thing here. Like read and react's not just like a descriptor. Read and react is an actual system. And read and react is all about pressure on the rim. Like the very first principle in the read and react offense is when you make a pass, you must basket cut. I see F all basket cutting, man.
Yeah.
Like what the Brad Stevens offense looks like, and I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I don't know if a lot of power goes to the wheels here, mate. Like, think about what it looks like. You get Robert Williams, right? Robert Williams come up to the top of the key, he'll get the ball, there'll be a handoff, he misses the handoff, there'll be a guy will come and set a screen. It's all east west action. Right, like it's just not enough north south early in the shot clock. It's not enough pressure on the rim. It's just a whole lot of guys running DHOs across the you know in between the two slots. It feels like, and as a result, you kind of it just like even when there's movement, it's like it's wasted motion. It's wasted motion if you're not putting pressure on the hoop.
Yeah.
Watching, I just sort of spent a bit of time before the podcast sort of watching, but I'll watch what Tatum kind of does. And I don't think Tatum's doing what he's like. I think he's doing what he's supposed to do in the scheme. The guy just spaces to the corner like 75% of the time. That's probably his role. That's probably what was called for in the offense. But he's just never in motion.
Yeah.
He's never. It never seems like he's in motion. Particularly, man, it just seems like I'd say it's just. Just never seems to result in pressure on the hoop. And that's what I want to see. And I feel like that's what's – sorry, I'm ranting now, but I feel like that's what Scal's often talking about, you know. It's pressure on the hoop on offense and pressure on the ball on defense. That's a sign of an aggressive team, and we just don't have either.
Yeah, paint touches as well, Joe, which is something that you've brought up numerous times, you know, throughout the life of this podcast over 3 years or so now, that paint touches seem to be an important ingredient to a successful – humming offense. And you know, you mentioned we're going east-west. They're sort of they are zipping the ball around the perimeter of the three-point line, but we're not getting those paint touches. And I think until we start to see that consistently, you know, we're not going to start to generate the sort of open looks and the motion that one needs to get to the cup.
If the ball's going around the perimeter, I'm holding up my hand right now, podcast listeners can't see it. So if the ball just goes around the perimeter, the defense can just kind of like go like that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
That's why a switching defense was real easy against that stuff. Okay. When you've got pressure on the hoop, right? What happens is the defense has to go like that. It has to squeeze in and then go out. That's where closeouts come from. That's mm-hmm. where open threes come from. Those are the best things. Like, really, the point of all offense is to generate a closeout, and the best way to do that is to you've got to get something. Get the ball into the hoop. That's
got to collapse the D.
Yeah, you got to collapse it. It's got to shrink and then have to pop back out. That's where it's at its weak point. It's not at its weak point when it's just moving around in a circle. You know? Like it's to be honest, switching's pretty easy. You know, if you know that there's no threat coming back. You know, there's no threat on you north south.
Yeah, just on your Tatum point a moment ago. I thought he was really good in the game from halfway through the third quarter onwards yesterday against the Mavs. I think one of his, like, I think his dad came out after the game saying that was angry Tatum or mad Tatum. And he seemed like from a certain point of the game, about halfway through the third quarter, he just suddenly switched something on and he was able to get to the rim with ease. And he was driving with this sort of forcefulness that we don't normally see from him. You say that, you know, he can't be an emotional leader. And I think as he's currently constituted, I agree with that. But he did seem to have some sort of emotional drive behind him at that point in the game, probably because he was humiliated with being down so much. And it seemed like, you know, the amount of times that he was able to drive and get to the rim and finish or draw fouls, like it was very un-Tatum-like, but also very surprising and frustrating because, like, okay, you have the ability to do that. Clearly, that's something that you're able to do. Why aren't we seeing that from you right from tip-off? Did you notice a difference in Tatum's game there from sort of that point in the game onwards?
Well, we started to close the gap, right? Like, when I say is not, I mean it. Is not emotional, is not an emotional leader. I mean, I'm trying not to be too, like, not to try and overly jump to conclusions about the future, you know, about what he can be or can't be. But the reality is, you know, like, he is not. Just to talk about the point that you have, the question that you asked directly there, Ben, I think Tatum's uncomfortable driving. He always has been. When you watch him drive, he doesn't have great balance. He often has his head out in front of his feet, right? Like, he's not that graceful. Like, Brown's a much more graceful athlete. Mm-hmm. And Brown has much better balance. And Tatum, like, one of the reasons why he picks up those offensive fouls for pushing his elbow out is because he needs to do it to regain his balance. Like, he's like it happened. He had one great play where against Dallas. This was in like the second quarter, I think. He hit corner with a pass. Like, he kind of drove, did the Hayward spin, and then dropped off the corner. Like, that was another classic one. He has to go like that because he loses his balance. So he needs to learn to generate contact while staying within himself. I think he needs to learn to use his shoulder a lot more effectively because he keeps reverting to this elbow thing, but that's because it's like he's trying to, like, sprint into the thing. You don't sprint into it. It's like you push through it. It's like the difference between, like, a deadlift and a jump. You know, deadlift is like the slow squeeze, you know? You kind of got to do that with the contact. You know, you can't try and – it's not like trying to – it's not like a punch, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I get you.
There's a different kind of force there. So he just needs – he needs that, man. Like, he really needs that because his points are just too, like – they're too finesse, and they're just going to come and go. We need consistent production. We can't just have him – making shots when everything's going well.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. So just quickly before we move on, Reddit user Gaga Kaba wrote, so on that Kongi thread about the issues with our offense, they wrote, "We looked so good against the Bucks last week. Everyone was moving on a string. I don't know why they keep ISOing. They can't even get to the free throw line." So on that Bucks game, like, they looked great. And it's kind of a callback to that first Reddit post that we called out where, like, you know, this time they were just converting on those open looks and it resulted in a pretty decisive win against the Bucks. So is that an anomaly, that Bucks game, or is there something that we can glean from that as far as how this team should adjust going forward? Or I'm just curious how you feel about the Bucks game in contrast to everything else we've sort of discussed so far.
I just feel like it was just 1-1 and we won half as... We win as many as we lose.
Simple, you know? As that. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, look, if the Celtics had shot at a normal percentage last night, we probably would have won. But yep. It doesn't change the fact, right, that this team has established a pattern of play that is kind of consistent with a spiritual malaise. They're not the aggressor, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're talented basketball players. They get paid millions and millions of dollars to do it occasionally. And in their case, one time out of every, you know, once every other game, it will go okay for them, you know? Mm-hmm. But yep. it's not meaningful. There's no future for this team as currently constituted. There just isn't. Like, this season at least, you know? It's not going to happen, man. I'll keep watching and hoping, but I know what I've seen, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you, Joe. Speaking of their constitution or how they're constituted, how do you feel about the Evan Fournier signing or trade?
So, I sort of thought that the biggest thing we needed was an emotional, like, sort of an emotional catalyst, right? Like, that's the biggest thing the team needed. Then, like, passing. Then, like, defense, and then, like, shooting. Like, kind of roughly in that order.
Yep.
And I sort of thought, look, for a start, like, there's no way a trade can be bad when it's like 2 second round picks. Plus, I think you made the point, you've also got to think how many second round picks did we pay to acquire the trade exception from Charlotte, which was 2, right? So I guess maybe 1. So call it 3 second round picks.
Well, we also gave up a couple in the Tice trade and we had to move on from Tice to free up some cap space. So,
so let's add those together. I didn't like the Tice trade. It was, I don't, you know, I understand why the ownership wants to dodge the luxury tax on a team like this year, but I'm like, man, I just wonder what would have happened if we just paid Horford. wonder what the chain, the think about the dominoes, you know? So the price was, in a vacuum, the price was pretty good, right? Like, you can't complain about 2 second round picks for Evan Fournier. I think he's the right sort of salary to acquire. Right, like, we need to acquire guys. I'm not worried about the expiring thing at all. What I'm concerned with is acquiring guys that we'd at least want to use their bird rights for, because that's what allows us to move, you know, over the cap is acquiring those guys. If we'd acquired someone like, say, Kyle Lowry was making, I don't know, 28 million a year, we wouldn't want to re-sign him for that number. So that would mean we'd used up, say, it's whatever we're willing to resign him for is actually what kind of the useful amount of salary is. And I think Evan Fournier, as for the player he's been in Orlando, is roughly worth the salary, you know, that he's getting right now. So I was okay with that because that means we can effectively extend the life of the TPE, right?
Yeah.
Because it's salary on our books that we can trade. And also, like, the biggest problem for us was we never had exact change. For trades, right? Like, there was nobody making between $10 and $20 million. We just had, like, these max guys like Horford and Hayward and Irving, and then we had guys on their rookie contracts. And you need change, eh? You need the right change to make trades. I said, you know, like, Otherwise, you're overpaying.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, he looks like he's, I would expect that he wouldn't be a negative value contract at $15 or $20 million a year, right?
Sure.
So I'm in favor of that acquisition. I just don't think it solves the problems for the team this year, really.
Yeah, but it is, I mean, I agree. I don't think that the season can be salvaged in any way, but I do think that it adds one more notch to our belt as far as, okay, there's one more reliable rotation piece. And in a team that's floundering in the way that the Celtics are, and a team that has so many young first or second year players, you know, your Grant Williams, your Romeo Langfords, to have a vet, savvy 28-year-old vet on a sort of a mid-tier. So he's earning $17 million a year. We've got his bird rights this offseason. So he is retainable. I do think that is a net positive for this team, and that we've got access to one more reliable contributor that we wouldn't otherwise have had access to.
Totally.
So segues nicely into this next post. This is by user Ducci D, and they say, this is early to say, but I'm looking forward to the offseason. And they go on to write, I can't think of a team that needs a roster reset more than the Celtics. I don't know what Danny Ainge will do, but it's clear that this team, as currently constructed, just won't get it done. So, Joe, what do you think the plan is for the offseason? What does the ideal offseason look like to you? And does it include an Evan Fournier re-signing?
Well, yes, I would have said so, because that's what, like I say, that extends the, effectively, it extends our traded player exception, right?
Sure. What else, though?
Man, I do honestly wonder whether it's worth tanking right now. it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Tatum, like, just had a bit of tendonitis. Like, and I hate that that's where I've come to, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but truthfully, we're not good enough to do anything. We need more talent. And fortunately, we have all of our own picks going forward. It wouldn't be the worst thing, man. It wouldn't be the worst thing. But I want to take all that back, because we have the curse of IT to deal with. And I don't like our chances of going into the lottery room with the curse of IT hanging over our heads.
What if we send IT as our lottery representative?
How good would that be?
Or is that just too douchey? We won't re-sign you, but can you please go to the draft lottery on our behalf?
Didn't he go in 2017? Wasn't he our rep with Markel Fultz when we won?
I think he went 1 year. Yeah, it might have been that year.
I want to look that up, but
and we ended up with Tatum, right? So he's clearly good luck. But that was before the curse.
It is staggering to think about, like, what, you know, like, just the amount of things that have not bounced our way since trading IT. Like, many things. It's. I know this makes me a Coke man, but like I believe it, you know. Like,
at this point, it's hard not to believe. Like, it's just so clear. So many things have gone the exact wrong way. You know, starting with the Hayward injury, and I'm even as superstitious to think, like, you mentioned that Tatum is not confident at driving to the rim. Is it because he saw Hayward crushed his ankle right under the rim in his very first NBA game? Like, one could be forgiven for being hesitant to put yourself in a similar position by driving to the rim if that was your first NBA experience, essentially. So I'm that deep into it. I think that the curse of the IT trade runs very deep and is still permeating through our roster to this day.
I know I bring this up a lot, but the other thing that people always forget to mention is the reverse protection. The Sixers offered us two picks. Their number three pick that year and the Lakers pick in the following year, which was reverse protected. It was unprotected between 5 and 10. So we reverse protected it. If we had just not protected the pick in that year, we would have gotten the Lakers pick at 10, whatever it was, which was Mikal Bridges, or there was heaps of good guys that they drafted Mikal Bridges. He'd be kind of useful right now. You know, and we just, like, if we hadn't have just been that greedy on that pick, man. It was like the 1 year the Lakers won 36 games or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like, and we wind up with Romeo Langford out of that pick. God bless him, but it's probably not going to work out for Romeo.
He's an unfair victim of the IT curse.
Totally.
It's not his fault.
Yeah, I honestly don't think so either, man. Like, for all I know, Romeo Langford could really play, man, but you just don't get 3 years to prove it. Like, roster spots are too scarce, you know? Like, they'll pick up his option, but is he really going to do anything next year? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised to see him not in more trade discussions or even moved during the trade deadline, because it could be that he has the most value now in sort of the mystique and potential around what he could or should be, as opposed to in a year's time where he's played, you know, hopefully 60 games and turns out that he's not all that. I was surprised they didn't move on from him. But, you know, I guess front offices are smarter than me and can see that see that kind of hype being built up by Danny Ainge potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't in favor of the pick. It was one of the I just didn't like the smell of, you know, I don't watch college basketball, so I don't really know it, but I just didn't like the pick at the time.
Yep.
There are a lot of other guys I would have preferred. I like Grant Williams' pick though, and that hasn't, you know, he's had moments, but it just I guess the Celtics still need young talent, unfortunately. You know.
Is Grant Williams part of the young talent cluster that you would hold on to? Is he still promising enough for you to not want to move on from him yet?
Nah, man, I'd trade anybody.
At this
like,
point?
Like, absolutely anybody. Yeah, but it's all about who for, right? It's like, what's on the other side of it? Well, you've got to give stuff up. I think we had, like, a podcast at the start of the year where we talked about how, like, if there's going to be this trade with the TPE, it's going to mean that one of your favorite young players is going to have to go, you know? Unless we got a situation like Fournier where they just kind of, they weren't going to re-sign him and they gave him away. You know, they effectively did a sign and trade early, right?
Yeah.
So, so look, anyone can be traded. You've got to be willing to trade anyone. And I think that includes the two Jays. It's like, I'm trying to be careful here, but like, they are, look, if you have two all-stars on your team, your team can't be a 500 team. Two genuine all-stars does not equal 500 team.
Yeah,
we are a 500 team, ergo we do not have two genuine all-stars.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, there's something in the alchemy there that just doesn't work that well. Doesn't mean that they can't play together with something else in the mix. You know, I'm not sure, but I remember at the start of the season. I remember thinking, you know, Hayward must have like looked at Charlotte and compared the roster with Charlotte to the roster of Boston and thought, it's kind of around about the same thing. You know, there's not like, I'm not materially closer to a championship in Boston than I am in Charlotte, but in Charlotte I get to play a little more basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah, it has. And you know, thus far, if that was his assessment of Boston, he's kind of been proven right, you know. He's having way more fun.
Yeah, and the Hornets, you know, they're swinging into Boston, I think, on Sunday or Monday. I'm pretty terrified of that game because I feel like it's going to be this affirming loss where if Rozier and Hayward, you know, swoop in and just pound us into the rubble, that it's kind of like almost like the final death blow, like just confirmation that everything we've done in the past 2 years has been completely wrong. Yeah. Would you do you're talking about the two All-Stars and being a 500 team, would you do the Brown for Beal straight up swap if that, you know, obviously we'd have to throw in a few little pieces as well, but if that opportunity arose, would you pull the trigger there?
If we were like 8 games over 500, probably.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Beal's just better, man. Like, you know, he's always going to be better than Brown.
But if we're 8 games over 500, isn't that sort of to say we're on the right track with the team as currently constructed?
Yeah, actually, now I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of, if my rule is, you know, hey, if you've got two all-stars, they should be good. Like, I'm thinking Washington Wizards, right? Like, they had two genuine all-stars and they were a so-so team, but they're like a 45-win team, right? That should be your baseline with two all-stars.
Yep.
And I guess right now we're looking at like a 41-win team. So maybe it's not that different. But I might retract that take. This is the
That's where we're at as fans. Like we're just kind of, I don't know what's going on.
Well, okay, it's got to put us, it's got to It's got to make the future way better or the present way better, right? A trade, mm-hmm. You know? And that kind of trade probably doesn't really – it makes us better. It certainly makes us better in the present. But better enough to actually be good? Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
We're just another team, like, with them.
Beal helps in the sense that, okay, our offense at the moment seems to be, for whatever reason, just jacking up shots in ISO, and Brad Beal is probably better in that sort of format. But if we continue along those lines and continue to run our offense that way, then it doesn't matter who we've got in that position. We're not winning shit. So, I think we need to stay the course with Jaylen Brown. And look, it's a hypothetical, and that opportunity isn't presenting itself anytime soon. So we don't need to spend too much time on that.
I don't mean to say that they're not, that I think they're bad players. It's just that, like, it just doesn't add up to two All-Stars worth with them together, you know?
Yep.
I'm not trying to assign, like, moral blame to them for the season, but the reality is they are the two best players on a team that's 500. That means they're just not that good right now, you know? They're good, but not that good. And they're young, but they're not that young, you know? So it's going to tilt, and like you can see, if we have another season like this next year, like, heads will roll, like,
oh, yeah.
They will get traded, you know. It is conclusive at that point, you know, and at that point they've kind of established who they are. So we kind of need to. It's like we need to make a judgment now, because if we were going to trade one of them for some sort of future asset, right, we'd have to kind of make that decision now because their trade value is still as good, right?
Sure.
As it would have been.
But I guess surely the one thing with this season, that's why it's hard to pass, you know, an accurate judgment on the team and the young players we have, is this whole COVID thing is crazy. And we have been one of the more COVID-stricken teams. And, you know, another team that's been riddled with COVID has been the Raptors, who were great last year. And, you know, a lot of COVID in that team. And as you can see, their record sort of reflects that. And yes, all teams are in the same position in terms of opportunities to practice and just general proximity to one another. But certain teams have been affected more, like, literally by contracting coronavirus than others. And I do think the Celtics are one of those teams and are clearly showing it. So that is kind of the difference in why. Yeah, like, if we have another season like this next year, hopefully that's in a post-COVID world for the most part. And that would, if we did have another season like this, it would be a genuinely bad season because there's less sort of COVID-y, pandemic-y factors influencing that. And we'd just be having, like, sort of a genuinely bad season as opposed to now, where it's kind of difficult to pass that judgment because of all the variables and things flying around there. That make any sense at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Hey, we've had COVID, therefore the season hasn't, you know, our players have been affected, therefore our season's gone. I can make a syllogism out of it. Do I buy it? Not really. Like, I sort of feel like everyone's in more or less the same boat in the league. The Raptors, I mean, they also have the fact that they're, like, have been kind of basketball vagabonds for you know, coming up 12 months now, right? You know, they haven't played once at home for 12 months.
They got
months,
that Tampa Bay sunshine instead of the dreary and coldness of Toronto.
But the Raptors one does give me pause, that, like, because to me that's like, I don't watch them really, so I don't know what's happening with their team, but I loved how they played. Like, I'm a...
Yeah,
like, I just
exactly.
I think they're great, and I that doesn't make sense to me that they've just fallen off a cliff like the way they have.
So if you had to cut all but three players from the Celtics, say it was some sort of deep, deep expansion draft, you can only keep three guys on the team, who are you keeping from this current Celtics team?
It's Tatum, Smart, Brown.
Really? Not Rob Williams instead of Smart?
Nah, Smart's a proven NBA player. Rob Williams is a center. Like,
yeah, okay.
Rob Williams might be great, but, like, this, you know, like, what are we expecting for Rob Williams? You know,
I think there's a lot of maybe unfair expectations on Rob Williams, given that we're all clutching at straws as far as what to be optimistic about. I think the expectations for Rob Williams are really, really high among the fan base at the moment.
Yeah, and look, he's, you know, what you see from Rob Williams right now might be it, you know, which is pretty good. Like, he gets lots of deflections and cool dunks and great passes, and he's certainly better than, like, I was wrong about him. I thought, I mean, this guy's just going to be a loser, but he's not. He's got some He's got some stuff. That's great. But yeah, I don't know if he's like Al Horford, you know, like in terms of, you know, a guy that that's effectively running the pick and roll stuff has been run through him. I'd still pick Smart over him, man.
Okay.
For sure.
We're close to wrapping up here, but we haven't talked about Brad Stevens yet, and there are a couple of interesting quotes from after the Mavs game. So John Corrales tweeted this quote from Brad Stevens. I'm not going to, again, sit up here and talk about what we can do and what we hope to do and all that crap. I've been around good teams and I've been around bad teams, and we're very average right now because we don't do it every night. And then Keith Smith also tweeted this quote. Reported to Brad Stevens, what are you most satisfied with? Stevens hesitates. And the reporter adds, if anything, and Stevens finishes with, if anything, yeah, if anything, that there isn't anything. That's maybe one of the first times all season that Brad Stevens has kind of, I won't say gone in on the team, but been a little bit more honest as far as like his disappointments.
We suck. Yeah. That's what he's saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is Brad Stevens deserving of any of the blame? I mean, we talked about if we have another bad season next year that, you know, heads will roll. Is Brad Stevens potentially one of those heads, or do you think he's sort of the pillar of stability and, if anything, he's the one safe seat?
Well, yes, he absolutely, you know, he could be. I mean, I have some issues with the way our offense is designed. It's just like I've probably always – there's always been two issues for me about with the Celtics is like, we don't rebound the ball well, right? And it is often felt to me throughout his tenure, like we just shoot. I just don't like the type of threes we get, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a function of coaching. But I also, one of the really valuable things about having a coach with safety and, you know, with the backing of the front office is it just creates accountability, right? Like, just means you can't get away with BS in theory. So I don't like a reactionary firing of a coach, particularly one who has got some. It's not like Brad Stevens doesn't have runs on the board. He does, you know. So I would err on the side of keeping him because I feel like it maintains organizational stability. And basically, like if the organization's strong, right, you get sustained success. And the Celtics have an opportunity to do it. I mean, Brad Stevens has been awesome for 8 years, you know. But is what he's saying getting through to his team? Like, clearly not.
Yeah.
Clearly not. So at some point, you know, at some point that can't continue.
Yeah, it was interesting. Tatum was interviewed by, I mean, I don't know if you can call it interviewed, but he had a conversation on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith earlier today. And like, I think Stephen A. Smith was basically trying to get Tatum to say anything negative about Brad Stevens for a headline. And it was really good to see that Tatum just wouldn't do it. And he also added that it's not Brad Stevens' responsibility to like rile the team up and inject energy into them. It's his responsibility to prepare a game plan for whatever game and get the team across it, and it's up to the players to go out and hype themselves up and to execute that game plan. And like Tatum's point was that Brad Stevens is doing a fine job. Like, he's not perfect is what he said, but he's doing a really good job of preparing them for the games. It's really on the players for not executing. So I don't know. My point is that it's good that even at this point, like Tatum, you know, given the opportunity, still isn't going in on Brad or really saying anything negative about him at all. So I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, I think Tatum's a genuinely nice guy too. That's what, like,
it helps.
You know, like, things could be worse. Hey, you know, things, like, we could have two really unlikable young stars as opposed to two slightly ineffective young stars, you know?
Yeah, we could be the Sixers.
We could be, yeah.
Although that would
perish the thought.
Dare I say it, it could be all right at this point in time. I wouldn't mind just stealing a few wins from their win column there. We're going to wrap up with this, Joe. It's a post by Leroy Browntown. Simply is titled, "This team is bad for my health." And they go on to say, I'm not going to read the whole post, but I think we all know what it's going to say. "I really don't know what to say anymore. It's truly painful to watch this team play. I'm usually the guy that's pissed about all the negative bullshit getting thrown around on this subreddit, but this is really just ridiculous. There's just too much talent on this team to be bad." We've covered a lot of the why and the how, Joe, but I'm really just interested, and this is a thing we've touched on throughout the life of this podcast, coping mechanisms. Like, for you, and you said something interesting in our Slack a week or so ago that this is where we earn our stripes as fans.
Totally.
So I need to hear this from you, Joe, as much as I'm sure some of the listeners do, but like how are you sort of mentally coping with this? You know, I think that watching the Celtics play Celtic basketball is a source of a lot of happiness for a lot of people, especially in these crazy, crazy pandemic times. How are you sort of mentally remaining optimistic throughout this part of the sort of the Celtics season?
Well, I'm not like optimistic for the season. You know, like I don't think the season's going to go well, but you still got to watch, right? Like it's like, you know, they're still going to throw the ball up again for the next game, and anything could happen, right? And it's basketball. It's fun. It's great when it goes well. People lose interest around when the teams go bad, right? And then you get to say in 5 years' time when things are going good, oh, I've been a fan since the days of the 500 season when Tatum and Brown, they were just young back then. Like, just you want what story do you want to be able to tell about the team? You know, like for me, I mean, part of my early fandom was the really bad years, where like 2003-04, that was a horrible season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was where after Antoine Walker got traded, and we were like a 35-win playoff team, you know?
Sure.
Like
that lasted a few years, right? Well, not even a playoff team.
We had a kind of good one. 2004-05 was quite a fun year. We actually traded back Antoine in the trade deadline. And
that's right.
We had Gary Payton on the team as well. So we had him, Payton, and Prince was also on the team. And we drafted Al Jefferson and Delonte West and Tony Allen. And that was really cool. And then 2005-06, things went back downhill. 2006-07 was awful because we were tanking that year. You know, you develop a history with a team, and that's part of the fun. You know, is when the good times come around, as they eventually do, because there's some organizational stability. You know, you get to say you were there for the tough times. You know, and any game can still be fun. In and of itself, right?
Like that Bucks game.
Like the Bucks game, right? Like just enjoy the good games when they come. Hopefully we get more of them than we do get less of them. I think we're going to get less of them than we get more of them this season.
Yeah. It's interesting. One thing you said there was that the good times do eventually come around because the Celtics have organizational stability. Like, can you speak more to that? Are the Celtics sort of one of those upper echelon franchises, you know, kind of like the Heat, like the Raptors, where... success is inevitable? Do you think that there's enough good pieces within the front office and the coaching staff that we can depend on that?
Yeah. How many times have we missed the playoffs since the Grasbecks bought the team in 2003?
Good point.
Like, we missed them in 2005-06, 2006-07, then again in 2013-14. It's three times in about 20 years that we missed the playoffs. Quick count. I might have gotten about something. But, yeah, heck yeah. That's so much better. Man, that's so much better than being the Knicks. They have, like, three good seasons in the last 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The good times will come around. They will.
Look, I think that's a really good point to end on, given where we're at in the season. All right, that's going to do it for this one. Thank you for tuning in. Joe, really good to have you back on the podcast, mate. Thanks again.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, we'll be back in another week or so. Until then, go Celtics. Peace.